हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so Sri Brahma Samhita, then we're on verse the Advaita Machutam Anadi Manantarupam, text 33. So then, continuing with dealing with the various words, Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau, having understood who is unqualified to reach the Lord. Now the qualifications are given, right? So the unqualifications then were the limited intellectual function, the jiva, because it's controlled, contaminated by time and space. Transcendental. Yeah, it's beyond the reach of the Vedas. If it's beyond the reach of the Vedas, it's beyond the reach of, everything else. How you say, I'm okay, you're okay. And how you say, the pilgrim, and whatever it is that you're into. Right? Where is it? Did we do? Where's the 20? Oh, that's 22. That's 21. Did we do? We do this footnote.
20 is on the first paragraph, Anantarupam. It says empiric philosophers at the end of that, and then it says 20. The first quote under Anantarupam.
Not on a Durlabham.
No, Anantarupam.
Anantarupam. That's 2 pages before. And I think we did.
You're talking about footnote 20, right?
No, I was saying that the 21.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about 20.
Yeah, no, 21. We did that. I think we didn't.
Yeah, 21 is Vedeshu Durlabham.
Yeah. So then okay. So it says the Vedas originate sound, and the sound originates in the mundane ether, so the Vedas cannot present before us a direct view of the transcendental world, Goloka. Right? So that means unless you're connected with the parampara, where you're in touch with the chit potency, then even through the Vedas you can't know the transcendental realm. Right? So the maximum you can get from the Vedas on the material platform is an appreciation that there is an absolute truth, it's unlimited, and there is the a element of consciousness and knowledge. That's the maximum you can get, right? And details of that they don't understand, because you see, as they read the scriptures and they speculate, come up with all kinds of strange and wonderful ideas about what they should, what it is and how it is and who we are and what it is and how we are it and it is we and we are all together and all that kind of jazz like that, quoting from the great personalities. Okay, then it says, so here it says, then footnote 21, Lord Brahma in 1/10th canto prayer reveals how the dust of the Brajabasi's lotus feet eludes the Vedas themselves. Quote, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth whatever in this forest of Gokula and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.34. Right, so it's like you have, because the Vedas are giving us a direction. That's the whole point of Upanayanam, is that then you're basically, you could say, initiated into the Veda. So that means it's to bring you near, because the Veda, it's a siksha aspect, right? It means we hear the word initiate, so then because our knowledge of it is coming from the Pancharatra, which is a transcendental aspect. So we take it that it means diksha and this kind of thing like that. But even as Jiva Goswami is explaining that diksha actually means it's about the siksha. It means qualification for siksha. So the Vedic is just a siksha connection. It's not a transcendental connection. It's just something that brings you and makes you aware of, or gives you the idea that, means gives you the opportunity to inquire about Brahman, right? So that's the point that it gives, Jai Ho. You know, so like that. And so then that's why it can't actually reveal those aspects, because we see is that in the literatures like Upanishads, it may be talking about the spiritual world, but unless you have come in contact, you know, of the Vedas through the disciplic succession that is connected to the spiritual world, you won't actually understand what it means. Even though it's described and things are there, you still won't know what it means. So that's the point that Brahma is pointing out, is that their lotus feet is still being searched for. So it's only when there's that connection like that. Does that make sense? Because we have one of the groups of gopis in Vrindavan are the personified Vedas. Right? The Vedas themselves personified, they're trying to attain that position. So it's not that they have the position, right? But it's still on the authority of the Vedas that is the connection that we make. And then through that, because they describe all the different aspects, but as pointed out, unless there's the connection, you won't understand it. You know, it's just like you could take any kind of technical thing and read it yourself, and you'll get, you know, some nice ideas and some interesting, but how you put it together, what are the values, what proportions you give, what weights you give to things, you know, something that's more important, you know, like, let's say, like, just for example, the kid reading the medical, you know, treatises, and, you know, then they see in there that whatever you eat, it doesn't matter what it is, the body converts it into glucose, and then the body burns glucose, right? So, body, you know, so that means the body burns on sugar. So now you could take it a step further, that sugar is the most important thing in the diet. So therefore, if someone is having any difficulties, then they should go on a, you know, pure sugar diet, you know, only sweets, exclusive, cut out all the things, you know, all the spinach and the broccoli, you know, and any of those other things like that, you know, oh yeah, especially what are those little round cabbages? Brussels sprouts, you know, all those things just out, you know, and just pure sugar, right? You know, cakes, cookies, you know, whatever you can get your hands on. So it by taking the things, then you would think, yes, maybe that is it. You could come to those conclusions, and you're going to get like that many sages and saints that will come up with these. So you're going to have the, you know, the sugar bodies. And then, you know, someone else, no, but you have to get the digestion, so you need that. So you're going to have the guys that are just going for bitter and that, but no, but unless there's heat, then you can't digest. So you're going to have the chili bodies, you know, like this. And, you know, and while everyone else is arguing like that, then the guy on the side will go, well, actually, it's the astringent like this. And, you know, and like this, so they'll go on and on and on. about it, and then some will say, no, you just only at a certain times of the day you eat, and others, no, you should eat every, 5 minutes you should be eating a sweet. I think that program is very popular in certain communities in Gujarat, right? Every 45 minutes they have a snack. They never actually eat a meal. There are families that every 45 minutes is a snack. They don't take much, like two doklas or two samosas or two this or that. And they do that every 45 minutes, all day, morning till night, and never actually sit down and have a full meal. So you can come up with all kinds of interesting things, right? Right? And then there'll be the new potato bodies. When you get the new potatoes and you boil them, stick a bunch of butter on it, salt, pepper, like that. You can do that. So like that, you're going to end up. So that's why you need the parampara, because why that? You can say, no, but the knowledge is there. But the thing is it's only, it has to be alive. So by contacting those from the spiritual world, they can tell you actually how it puts together, because ultimately we can say, no, but I think this and I think that, but it doesn't matter. It's what Krishna thinks. So when our intelligence is in line with what Krishna thinks, then it becomes a value, because that's what goes on in the spiritual world. Even here in the material world, it works like how Krishna thinks. Krishna thinks something's good. You perform that, you get good results. You don't, you decide, no, we're free, we're independent, we can do what we like, and these things are old and archaic, and we're going to do something new and fresh and all that, and it never works out like that, like that. Does that make sense? I mean, it's just like one portion of history would be missing from our, from the books if Francis of Assisi actually thought he could fly and try jumping off the roof. But fortunately, he's in Italy, though it's on the ocean, and it's a peninsula. It's not the peninsula of Mexico or something where he might run into some, particular kind of, how you say, fungus growing out in the forest and all that. Then he might have tried. Then we wouldn't have heard anything about him, because he would have gone up on the roof, taken off his clothes, says, I can fly, we're free. And then that would have been it. And everybody in the village would have, I always thought he was a bit strange and everything like that. And so, and that's it. We wouldn't have heard about him. So like that, we have to follow the laws as Krishna gives them. So it's how Krishna thinks and why Krishna thinks, what are the moods and all that? Because otherwise somebody, oh, he's just the powerful God. He's just this, is that. Like the Upanishads give the story of the elephant, right? You have an elephant and six blind persons come up and contact the elephant. So one comes up and, he's got the tail, long thing. He has, oh, he's like a snake, like that. The other one, the leg. Oh, it's like a tree trunk, like that. And then another one, the ear. Oh, he's like a bird, like this. They go on and on. So you come up with such different elements that they can't really tell what's going on. And so that's the point. But then someone who knows like that, they can reveal. That's how then it's revealed scriptures, because Krishna, he can reveal. It's not that what it says in the Veda isn't going to be correct once it's revealed. Like we see with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was, greatest scholar. So he was very, very well read in that. And then after meeting Lord Chaitanya and being instructed by Lord Chaitanya, then he was sitting and thinking and then going that there were verses that he knew, but they didn't make any sense. That one, about the Tvisha Krishna verse, that one, Sangopanga, he couldn't figure it out. And then now that he's met Lord Chaitanya and it's been revealed, then he understood. So like that, there's a lot of verses that talk about Lord Chaitanya and that. And so only then he understood. So that's the point, is that the material energy on Krishna's order will cover or uncover, right? Because that's the thing she does, cover and throws or uncovers. And I'm not sure if she picks you back up or, like that, or offers you a ride, but you have to make the decision to take it. Yeah. Does that make some sense? So just because one is scholarly doesn't mean you know. You have knowledge. But the point is it will only actually become vigyan by the contact with the parampara and the chit potency. Then, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna's confidential exchange with Brahma proceeds as follows. O Brahma, give up such an unusual exception and pray for something more suitable to you. Because he's just saying, let me be born as a blade of grass, because then all the Brajbasis will come and walk, and like that, he'll get blessed. So Krishna is saying, no, then let me be born at the, Brahma said, then let me be born at the edge of Gokula as a stone slab or piece of cloth to take the dust from the feet of one of your menial sweepers. Krishna, but Brahma, what is the reason for such glorification of the inhabitants of Vraja? Do you not have shame as worshipable creator of the universe to bathe in the dust of the lowly sweeper? Right? Because we have to remember this is after the pastime where Brahma already is thinking that he is the worshipable creator of the universe, and that didn't go very well, right? And so then and then Krishna came and everything turns into Krishna and all that. And so then he understands, oh, this is special, right? Then Brahma says, but they have taken as their very life the most beautiful, with smile like a jasmine flower. Without you, they perish because they have such unprecedented love for you. You are all in all, without which eating and drinking have no meaning. Even now, the Shrutis are searching for the dust from their feet without success. I should be more ashamed than the Vedas with my little prayers. O Lord, let that be. Previously, I prayed with Vaidika Bhakti. Now I pray to be immersed in the ocean nectar of Raghunuga Bhakti, having become the loyal follower of the inhabitants of Braja. Sardarta Darshani Tika 10.14.34. Right, so here he's saying, okay, Krishna, in other words, we say, well, Krishna, why are you doing that? Why you have this and this and that? So we think that maybe he is what do you call it? You know, Krishna is, you know, one is he could be setting, having some fun with Brahma, or setting an example of, you know, what is proper for praying and all that, just to get him to explain it, because others may hear it and not understand it and may have these doubts. No, but he's the topmost. How can he just be there? And anything that walks by, you know, crawls over him, then that's great, you know, like that. And so then you get, you know, because people have their mundane concepts. So then, by Krishna keep asking these things, then Brahma actually then analyzes and says, well, I was looking at it from the Vaidhi aspect. I'll take there and get the dust from their feet. This way I'll advance. But now he sees, now he's just saying, I just want to be immersed in the ocean of nectar of Raghunuga Bhakti, having become the loyal follower of the inhabitants of Braja, right? So that then he thinks further. Otherwise, that's his first thing. And, it, you know, it sounds, it's, you know, very humbling, very this. But then the point is, okay, that's just, I'm going to be there. I'm not doing any service. I'm taking the dust on their feet. So I'm humble. I'm taking that attitude like that. But now he's thinking, no, I should be dynamic. I should do service. Following them, being the loyal follower, I should then serve in that platform of Rag Bhakti, right? So we see is that there's going to be a difference in mood, right? So it's there. And he says, loyal follower, not just a follower, but loyal follower. That means whoever it is that mind, that's who you're following. It's not that, okay, this is great today, and hey, they're doing something cool. I'm going to go off with them, and then, oh, hey, check that out, you know. No, loyal means you're with that group. You're with that group, like that. And that's the point. You go out, you want to go shopping. Like some say, well, you know, is our Rasa fixed and this and that, and what if I don't want to do that? I want to do something, because they just want to be open. It's like shopping, you know. You go to the mall, go check out the stores, go in, check out everything. Well, you know, that's good, but what about this? Well, we'll go over here. Well, that looks not. No, it's just a matter of you're following certain devotees, and so then following their footsteps, you'll assist them in their service. And so that's the way it works. And as we see, is Brahma, then having that realization from the Lord, then felt that this is, you know, he wants to serve the Brajavasis and that, and then like this, it's just, because the first point is that you want to serve the residents of Raja, right? Because that's the first thing, is that there's a generic mood, because you see, he's just talking about the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He's not just talking about one particular group or this, because all of them have that Krishna is their life and soul, right? So that kind of surrender is what one wants. And so one is trying to appreciate that mood. If that is appreciated, then you can say, within that, I would like to assist here, right? But if you don't have the mood of that full surrender, like the Vrajabhasis, and that sense of loyalty to that service and their mood, then it's not going to happen. Why would they take you on if you're, you know, kind of flippant, then, you know, checking out this, checking out that, then it's not going to work, right? The acharyas give us so much nice things. You see that, you appreciate, then you follow that line. And if you want to check out this and that, you can, but, you know, but at the same time, is until you fix your mind on something, you know, it's just like you say, it's no, but then, you know, that would be like saying, once I decide what I want to buy, then I've lost all my freedoms. I'm restricted. I'm just, no, you've had your freedom. And then when you choose, then you take that, and then it will work. You know, because it's not just about us. It's about, yes, you want to choose, but once you choose, then you commit, because then the Vrajabhasis themselves, then they'll give their blessings and all that. Then one can move forward nicely. Does this make any sense, or am I talking too far out in the ozone or something like that? And like that.
Yeah, give me a chance, Mark.
Oh, okay. Just want to make sure, because I say some places on the earth, the ozone is thicker, and some places it doesn't exist at all. So if you go out to, like on the North Pole, if you go out to go into the ozone, you'll end up, you know, you'll just keep going. There is no ozone. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So that's the point, is so we can see here is that's the point. Unless you take shelter of the devotees, you can't understand the Veda. Right? Because the Veda is the authority. You won't understand it. Does that make sense? Okay. Adurlabham atma bhaktau. Having understood who is unqualified to reach the Lord, right? Just that intellectual things that just by my power, my intelligence, I'll understand everything. They can't be. You know, and if they're disqualified, then just the standard karmi is also disqualified, because they're not even looking for that much knowledge. They're just looking for the ritual in the Veda, so they can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy themselves. Right? Okay, so then, quote, this is from the purport. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It is only when the Vedas are imbued with the chit potency that they are enabled to deal with the transcendental. But Goloka reveals itself to every jiva soul when he is under the influence of the spiritual cognitive potency, samvit, joined to the essence of ecstatic energy, Hladini. Right? So the point is, Goloka reveals itself to every jiva, means anyone, when they're under the influence of the spiritual cognitive potency or the chit potency, joined to the essence of the ecstatic energy, Hladini, or, you know, the Ananda potency. So bhakti means the combination of those two. When they're done in that connection, you're performing an action with the purpose of pleasing Krishna. That's bhakti, right? Then we'll see that the sandhini potency, right, means the existence potency, then will reveal everything. So he says here, Goloka reveals itself, means the sandhini then reveals everything when you function with those two together. But the point is, unless the chit potency is there coming down from the parampara, then only... Then, and you follow their instructions that you should apply your life in devotion to Krishna, then Goloka, you know, as the plane will reveal like that. So that's the point, is each one is doing. So the Goloka is revealing like that. And Yoga Maya is giving the opportunity to take up that service in devotion, but that means that devotion has to be under then in this case the Brajabasis, and then as we see, you know, as it goes on, then, you know, headed by Srimati Radharani and her followers. Right? So yeah. The ecstatic function of devotion is boundless and surcharged with unalloyed transcendental knowledge. Right? So the ecstatic function, it's endless, means the happiness is there, but it's not that it's surcharged with transcendental knowledge. That knowledge is not just about facts and figures. The knowledge is how to please Krishna, you know, how to do the different activities to please the Lord. That's the whole point. So they have so much knowledge and they know everything. But the point is it's what's important for the service and all that. That's what you apply. Like, you may know so much knowledge, but if you're cooking, you're going to use that knowledge. If you're driving, you're going to use that knowledge. It's not that, oh, yes, I have the knowledge, so then, you know, we have to understand this is not Dune, where we just sit around in a glass jar as a brain and then think, yeah, I just think it all happens like that. No, you know, and then they probably haven't fully explained what the spice is, you know. Okay. That knowledge reveals Goloka Tattva, the principle of the highest transcendental, right? In unison with devotion, without asserting itself separately, but as a subsidiary to unalloyed devotion, right? So Goloka Tattva means what is going on there. Is there along with that transcendental devotion, right? Because that devotion means it's going to be that, means the Sambit and Ladini, right? So Goloka as Sandini is going to reveal itself when you have the when you have the devotion, the combination of the two. So in other words, all three are together. So when you get Chit and Ananda, then eternity will come into it, like that. Does that make sense? Because then you're transferred to the eternal platform. So unless you have knowledge about Krishna, devotion to Krishna, then only you're committed to that, then you can reach the eternal platform. Right? But the point is, it's not about getting to the eternal platform. That's just the platform on which that devotion is being practiced. And that means the highest transcendental ecstasy is there, and one has all the knowledge. But that knowledge is only useful in as much as it serves Krishna, right? Like that. So without asserting itself separately, it doesn't make itself prominent, and that's the main thing, you know. It's about the devotion. So it's always there in the background. You know, you have the environment, and in that environment, it's so wonderful. And in that environment, the devotees serve Krishna. It's not about the environment. It's about serving Krishna. So that's the whole point, is that if these great personalities, they can take a subservient mood, you know, to the pleasure of Krishna and his associates, and that rasa, you know, it's going on, and the ecstatic mood of that, and the knowledge and qualifications, you know, individual qualifications to perform certain activities at certain times for the pleasure of Krishna, but you perform an activity where? In a place, not in the space. You know, you're not floating in the clouds and that kind of thing. It's you're there in the realm of Vrindavan, right? So it is the place in which all the activity goes on to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's about pleasing Krishna, right? You have Icha Kriya Jnana. So Krishna's the potency. So Krishna, Icha, his desire is then he wants to have, you know, loving exchanges with the devotees. So then, okay, so then we have the devotees and the activities they're doing to express that loving exchange, right? That'll be then supporting that. So that combination of the devotees performing activities to please Krishna, now that has to be done in a place. Right? Because a particular desire, like if Krishna wants to play and splash in the water, then you kind of need some water, you know? I mean, he could possibly, you know, get all the servants together and fill up one of the rooms in Nanda Baba's house and all that, and make a pool and then start splashing and all that. And it might go really great until Mother Jashoda wonders why there's no one around to help her. you know, do a cooking event. And then she goes and looks, and then she found he, you know, Krishna's turned, you know, the main room into a swimming pool. You know, it might not work out so good. Right? So therefore, there's the Jamuna River. Right? And so like that, it has places. And then there's, you know, lakes within the river. Just means there's areas that where it won't be so deep. You won't have the current moving. It'll go back. So it'll be nice and calm. So you can go in there. You can swim. You can play. You can do all these different activities. So the whole point is that pleasing Krishna by interacting, because those two go together, you need a place. So you see, the two go together. Pleasing Krishna means you're performing devotional activity. And that then is imbued with all transcendental ecstasy. But you need a place for that to happen. So when you have the one, Goloka will reveal itself. Right? And Goloka means the place where all these pastimes are going on. You say, well, I'll just go with the pastimes. But then how will you get, what about the place? You know, where will it be? Okay, Radha and Krishna are having wonderful pastimes. Where? Oh, they're just having pastimes. And that, you know, I mean, that what's going, where's the place? No, it's just having, no. So the point is there's a place, you know, they're at Radhakund, or they're at Govardhan, or they're at, you know, some other, the Yamuna, or different places like that. And so that's the whole thing. When you go on pilgrimage, you're going to the places, right? And then at the place, what do you discuss? How the devotees and Krishna are interacting. So that element of devotion and the exchange of transcendental experience that's going on there. Does that make sense? How they go together? So the Dham is always supporting. Yeah? Yeah, so it's going like that. You know, so, yeah. Yeah, so it's without asserting itself, right? That knowledge reveals Goloka Tattva, the principle of the highest transcendental, right? The highest transcendental position. But that position is in unison with devotion without asserting itself separately, right? Because otherwise, no, you know, you're trying to get to the spiritual and this, and we put that as prominent. But that's just the place. So you want to get to the highest transcendental position. The point is without the devotion to Krishna, why would the position manifest itself? Does that make sense? Because it's always a subsidiary to unalloyed devotion, the Goloka Tattva. Right? Jiva Goswami anticipates another doubt, and in doing so, points out how Narayana is easier to attain than Krishna. Quote, but Narayana alone is praised in the Vedas, end quote. If one knows the real meaning of the Vedas, then Krishna can be ascertained by studying them. But actually, only by bhakti is Krishna to be known, right? So if you have bhakti, then studying the Vedas, you can know that, yes, it's Krishna is there and he's talking about Krishna, and that is bringing out the highest. Otherwise, then you'll just see that Narayana is being discussed. Thus, he is easily attained by his devotee. Adurlabham atma bhaktao, right? So Durlabha is for those who think that they're scholarly and by that they'll know everything. But Adurlabham for the atma bhakta, for the devotee who his life and soul is Krishna, right? Then they can know. Does that make sense? Like, is that higher platform? We call Raga Nuga. We're following the footsteps of those who are Rag Atmika. Right? Rag is their life. Right? Just that attachment to Krishna, that's their life. You know, as I mentioned before, without, you know, eating things, drinking things, doing things that have no meaning if Krishna's not there. Like we can see is when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, then Krishna, Yoga Maya then arranged, because he wanted him to go and talk with the Vrajbasis and everything like that. But he saw the apricot pastimes. Right? So he went in, you know, the cows are moving around and running, you know, happily and doing the different things and that, and King saw Nanda Baba and everything like that. And so that worked out. He came and he saw the the apricot pastimes, because there it's always gone, because Krishna's always there. He didn't see the prakat situation. It's what was actually going on, because the two are there right at once. The acharyas described that both are happening at one time. It means the apricot's always going on, and then sometimes the prakat is manifest. And so you might have Nanda Baba in the one and Nanda Baba in the other, but they never see each other. Yoga Maya arranges, you know, like that, right? Isn't it? Yeah, because according to the sci-fi tropes, if you see yourself, then, you know, all trouble breaks loose. Yeah, like that. So, yeah, because what is it? Then it all implodes, turns into a donut, and then you find that you have a big, you know, some happy policeman, you know, is going to, you know, Yeah, so you want to avoid that. Okay, so then footnote. Oh no, is that footnote? Oh no, we have more of footnote. Oh, I see. It's just the way the layout happened. We have more from footnote 21. Then we have 22. How far does that go? Okay, so it's just that little bit there. Okay, so we'll continue with the footnote 21, you know, about getting a direct view of the transcendental world. But what does this devotion come from, and how is it imparted? Srila Prabhupada reveals, quote, actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau, Brahma Samhita 533. One cannot attain the perfection of spiritual life simply by following the directions of the Vedas. One has to approach a pure devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.12 purport. Right? So that's why it's so important we see in the Kali Yuga. Because see, in other ages, people tend to be more qualified just by the inherent nature of the previous ages. So you have very qualified individuals, and you have means, and others are qualified that they understand that it's about devotion and things like that, or, you know, somehow or another they contact, then they'll go looking for these people, right? And when they find them, then very nicely they can surrender, do everything. Everything goes very nicely, right? Like that, you see Dhruva Maharaj, right? Five-year-old Kshatriya kid, five-year-old grumpy Kshatriya kid, right? Goes to his mother. Okay, you know, how do you work this out? You know, they won't let me sit on my father's lap, saying, you know, that you know, because you're not born from the lady who's talking, and therefore, you know, only her son will get the kingdom, like that. So you're not qualified. So he goes to his mother at five and says, how do I get a kingdom bigger than my father's? Like that. And, you know, her thing is, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, only by God's grace you can do that. And then they say, okay, so where's God? I want to talk to him. Right? Well, I don't know, but I've heard that, you know, the sages know God and they go to the forest, so maybe he's there. So, okay, you know, he marches off to the forest. And because his determination is such, then Narad Muni, appreciating this, then he comes to him, you know, and just, you know, walk along, and, hey, you know, hey, kid, what's happening, you know? And so then he asks him, you know, how do I know God? You know, why do you want to know? Because I want to get this, you know, this and that, you know, like that. Okay. And he sees, you know, he basically tries pleasantly to get him to go back home. But no, okay. So then he gives him mantra and, you know, explains to him the yoga system and that. And then he starts. You know, and in 6 months, then the Lord arrives, you know, like that. So don't underestimate five-year-olds. Yeah, Kshatriyas who are grumpy. Yeah. So, there was a point to this story. This was just the example, right? Yeah, because I mean, from here we can go into, you know, training kids and 5 year olds and this and that, or you know, going out in the forest and that, or holding your breath, and you know, but he didn't turn blue. That's the difference. See, when a kid holds their breath, they turn blue. They're not a yogi. But if they can hold their breath and don't turn blue, then they're a yogi. Yeah, and then the blue guy shows up. So that's the one thing. Blue is going to happen, whether you're going to turn blue or you're going to attract the original blue man. Yeah, so means if it's about, you know, the absolute, then you attract the original blue man. And if not, then you are an imitation blue man, and then you faint. I still don't think we've gotten any farther to where, any closer to, okay, by following the direction that one has to, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. We were talking about the yugas, and we just talked about, you know, how they had more qualification. That's what we were trying to do. So in the Kali Yuga, then, you know, we heard from the Bhagavatam all the wonderful qualifications, you know, the notable qualifications of those in the Kali Yuga. You know, they're lazy, they're unintelligent, they're, you know, let me see, unlucky, you know, and above all, always disturbed, right? You know, there's always, you know, the neighbors and the construction work next door, and yeah, it's always going on. So, therefore, in this age, then we see Krishna's established the principle of founder acharyas. And so then you have the parampara, but to be able to approach and understand, because in this age people aren't that intelligent, nor that fortunate, you know, and like that. So therefore, yeah, and they're lazy, so they won't put in the effort. And so then the founder acharya then gives what is the essence, how to exactly go in and see exactly what is there. So, and everybody, that's what Prabhupada is saying, everybody can get. Actual knowledge of transcendental can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee, right? So that means then you want to be able to contact a pure devotee. So when you have the founder acharya, then you have the pure devotee. Now, then you approach devotees of that devotee, right? Because as it is, we're servants of the servants of the servant, like this. So then you have like that. And that way then, the instructions you can always say, because that's the important thing. The connection, if the connection is there, if someone has received from the parampara, that connection is bona fide. But the important thing about the connection is the instructions. And so therefore, then you have the founder acharya, you follow those instructions, it will work. And so the duty of others is, like Prabhupada says, is the founder acharya. All other gurus, they give what's called relevant instruction, right? It means the founder acharya's instructions, you know, in such a way that it's relevant to you. And you could say it's also relevant, means it's relevant in light of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. You know, that's how it works. So whether they're themselves a, you know, Uttamadikari pure devotee, or they're a Madhyama or a neophyte, as long as they're a pure devotee of Srila Prabhupada, and that, you know, whatever stage they're at, then that will connect you to Prabhupada, connect you to the mind, the instructions. I mean, the diksha, you're connected anyway, but by the siksha, then you have that, because otherwise some people get into the whole thing, but he's not that qualified, but that's why there's a founder acharya. You know, they talk about not only Prabhupada, but they're only talking about Prabhupada because he's a great devotee. They're not understanding his position as the founder acharya. They're talking about him as the pure devotee. You know, then he is special and unique. But the point is he's coming in and taking the position of founder acharya. And that's what makes the system work. So they're just, oh, he's a pure devotee. So, but the next ones, we can't say they're pure devotees, right? Because they're, you know, my god brothers, or I even joined before him. So how is it he's a guru and I'm not? And how is it he knows? No, it has nothing to do with all that. It's that connect to the and you as a siksha. Some people do the diksha side, but if you put the emphasis on siksha, then you don't have to worry about that, because then anybody who can inspire you about Krishna is a siksha guru, like that. And so then it's just a matter of how much, how close, how much effort is being put in and everything. And it takes you like that. So that's the point here. One has to approach a pure devotee, right? So one approaches the devotees, and through the devotees, one learns about the founder Acharya. And then everything's there. The books are there. Then you study the book. You're sincere. You study. Then we see is that the Sandini potency reveals, and you can explain to others. It means it doesn't matter. You can say, no, but unless they're on the topmost platform and like that. And it's like, and who made you a devotee? Who inspired you in Krishna consciousness, right? Prabhupada himself came right to your place and spoke right to you and, you know, got you to do all those things. A few devotees, that is the way it worked. But for most, it was someone else. It might have been a senior devotee, but it might have also just been a new bhakta. So the point is he has that faith, because the first point of faith means that you have faith in the eternal form of the Lord. And then the next point, that's the first stage, right? You're on the path of Shraddha to Prema when you have that faith, right? Then when you have faith that pure devotional service is the goal, that's what you want to attain, then you have faith in the association of devotees, because you're going to get that through the devotees. Right? Then the whole thing starts. So that means if that new bhakta has that faith, because that kind of faith is there at the second stage, sadhu sangha, or because you have that faith, you get sadhu sangha. So that's there. That's before bhajana kriya. So that means at the point of sadhu sangha, they can inspire you to get that faith to take up devotional service. Right? But we're trying to get from there, you know, to another seven levels to prema. Right? So the point is that it works. So if it's working there, why wouldn't it work with someone who's been around a little bit longer and, you know, has done such serious service in the movement? Why wouldn't they be able to help you? The new bhakta got you off the street, drag you out of the gutter, then why not that or wherever you were? So once I said that in the class, the senior devotee said, I wasn't from the gutter. He was trying to point out he was older, so he wasn't from the hippie generation. He was from the previous generation, like that, you know, whatever they were. Beat and mix or, yeah. That or even maybe even before that, but no, probably like that. Yeah. So in any case, you know, exactly. So it means the beats were W. No, the boomers are W, and their children are X. No, X. Yeah, X. So that means before that, they were W. U, V. V. They were the V generation. V for victory, right? Because they grew up in World War II, right? Like that, you know. Yeah, V for victory. And then it went down, not to their parents, but then their kid, their grandchildren building it up. Yeah, V, peace. You know, I guess if you have peace, then you'll have victory. I mean, that means you have victory, you'll have peace. Yeah, I think isn't that the in Latin? If you want peace, prepare for war. Yeah. Okay. So according to Srila Prabhupada, even for the sadhaka on the path, these words carry special meaning. They emphasize a lifestyle which balances book knowledge with practical application and service. Quote, although all Vedic literature is meant for understanding Krishna, one cannot understand Krishna without being a lover of Krishna. Therefore, along with the reading of Vedic literature, swadhyaya, one must engage in devotional worship of the deity, archan vidhi. Together, these will enhance the devotee's transcendental understanding of devotional service. C.C. Madhyalila. Or 137. Yes, yeah, so in Archana Vidhi, it has five angas, or five branches, and the last one is Swadhyaya, studying the scriptures. And that includes, but that also includes applying that. So that's the thing, is what he means here, is you have to apply it. that you study the scriptures, but then you have to apply it with worshiping the deity, you know, your sadhana, worship of the deity, I say chanting the holy name, serving the Vaishnav, serving the guests, honoring Prasad, worshiping Tulsi, worshiping the Dab. All these seven aspects have to be on, and did I mention Tulsi? Yeah, okay. So then these are all, they have to be applied. So the point is it has to be, you've studied and applied. That's the whole point. Study is Shravana, application is Manana. Then from that combination, then we see the Sandini potency, then being pleased, then there's a realization. Then there's Vijnana, right? Or Nididhyasana. Not to speak of the jnanis and karmis, even if one is practicing, a practicing devotee with a balanced lifestyle, the Lord may still be difficult to understand. As Srila Prabhupada explains, this is to be expected since God even bewilders himself, right? So the devotees may get, you know, and then he's pointing out here is that the jnanis and karmis, of course, are bewildered. They don't know. They can't know. Only the devotee can know. But even the devotee may be bewildered. Because, you know, as he says, Krishna even bewilders himself, right? Like that. Quote, it is not that we have to understand Krishna fully. That is not possible. He's unlimited. We're not. So we understand our relation and connection to Krishna. And then whatever situation we're in, that what we're connected to, we'll have an understanding of that. So you just have to understand the situation you're in, right? You can say, no, but I want to understand everything. It's just like saying no. It's like saying, I'm going to take the whole ocean and I'm going to put it in this little vial that I keep in my pocket. No, it's not going to happen. We have no capacity to understand the unlimited, right? That's like the point. It's just we have no capacity. Advaitam achutam anadim anantarupam, Brahma Samhita 533. With our limited knowledge, we cannot understand the unlimited. Indeed, even Krishna does not understand himself. This attraction is unlimited, and to understand why he is so attractive, he became Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and took on the ecstatic emotions of Srimati Radharani, Radha Bhava Dyuti. If Krishna cannot comprehend the limit of his own attraction and bliss, it is certainly not possible for us with our limited knowledge. If we can simply understand Krishna in part, that is our perfection. So that's the whole point of when you say rasa, Krishna is rasa. That means all the aspects of rasa are Krishna. And we have a rasa with Krishna, right? So we understand that, and we understand that feature of that. You know, so you say conjugal rasa. If you're in Braj, you understand it there. You're not absorbing yourself in what's going on in that in Dwarka or in Ayodhya or in that. You can appreciate, but you understand one's own. It means you understand. The understand means you can work within it, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, because we have to know who we are. You know, it means if you can know, it means if you take 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair, and we can understand the whole pastime, this whole environment and everything and all the devotees and all what's going on, that's unlimitedly bigger than what we are. So we should be happy. We should know, I want to know it. You can't know everything, you know. Teachings of Lord Kapila, approaching a bona fide guru. Right? So Krishna can't comprehend because he's ever expanding. So he's there, then he'll understand what's there, and then he's already expanded. So then he understands what has expanded. He's expanded more like that. And so therefore, and to take the position where you understand, because he himself then would have to understand, but then that will be the Atmarama aspect and how that is unlimitedly going. But the point is that doesn't give, that on its own won't give the highest flavor. So as we saw, the situation is there, but when it's about the devotion with the devotees, the interaction with the devotees, that aspect, that gives the highest pleasure. So that means if he wants to understand the unlimited features of rasa of himself, then he has to take on the mood of his Swarup Shakti, which also is unlimited. As he's unlimited, then she's unlimited because he's expanding, and that means his energies, and so it goes on. So Therefore, taking Srimati Radharani's mood, then he can taste that unlimited aspect. But it's all ever going. It's ever fresh. So you can ever, you know, so therefore, it's not that he comes and does the pastime of Lord Chaitanya. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Been there, done that. Okay. Let's move on to something else, you know, like that. He's eternally performing those pastimes, just like as Radha and Krishna, they're eternally performing the pastimes, ever new, ever fresh, ever expanding like that. Yeah. Good. Okay. Now, footnote 22. That was footnote 21. Okay. All devotees can attain the Lord easily, no matter how fallen their condition. Hariba! Hariba! Yes. Yeah. Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eaters can purify themselves from the contamination of the low birth. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. Right, because here is that generally when we think of the dog eaters, we just think of those who eat dogs, right? Like that, you know, so, you know, they say, you know, read Koreans or something, you know, like this. But the point that comes up is that you do have the particular category that is dog eaters, and they're quite comfortable, you know, with the, you know, how you say, I don't know, what do you mean, a dog burger or something, or whatever it is, a dog sandwich. And so, but in the Vedas also we see that if you're talking about a general category, means all the, what do you call it? All those who are below the level of Shudra, right? All of them, they can be categorized generally as the name Chandala, right? So in other words, of all the varieties, because there's so many varieties, then Chandala is kind of like the lead, right? You know, it gets more this way and that way, because they are, right, the combination of a Shudra father and a Brahmin mother, right? You know, so that that song of, what is it? If I was a carpenter and you were a, you know, a lady, you know, some high class lady, you know, yeah, would you marry me anyway, like that? So in other words, you know, that, you know, let's make chandalas. Yeah, honey, wow. You know, like that. So, you know. So, yeah, that was the problem. The 60s had problems, right? And that, they kind of set the flavor for that downward trajectory that we're enjoying now, right? You know. So, with that, then you have a, because let's say the son, they take on the nature of the mother, but the mentality of the father. So you can understand if you have a brahminical kind of nature, but your mentality, your spirit is that of a Shudra, what are you going to do with that kind of brain and that kind of thing? You're going to use it against all these things. How to be, you know, you're smart enough, you can break down everything, mess up everything, turn everything upside down. In other words, you can do the mode of ignorance proud, you know, by able to turn what's right, make wrong, and make wrong like that, you know, so like that. So in that category, then you can think of, you know, university professor or, you know, like that, or, you know, these kind of personalities that what they're talking is absolutely destructive to the human consciousness and elevation. So that, you know, in general, then you get the point is, so therefore, that's why out of all of them, you know, all they're going to make trouble. They're sinful. They do nonsense stuff and this and that. But the Chandala, he really makes trouble because he can influence others and makes it his business. Right? Like that. So, yeah. So does that make sense? So whenever it mentions Chandala, then one can feel, you know, the comfort of being included if you're something other than, you know, a, how you say, properly born, you know, and, you know, with the samskaras, you know, of a Brahma Kshatriya or Vaishya, you know, like that. Or even just, you know, you're following the Vedic culture and you're Shudra. So in other words, if you're not in Brahma Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, you know, like that, nicely doing your duties because they should be done, like that, or even if there's a little bit of, you know, whatever it is, you know, interest in the results, then you can comfortably feel that you're included whenever they mention dog eaters. You don't have to worry that no, but we're left out and like that. So when it mentions about the Kiratas and the Hunas and the everybody like that, then you can say all those, you can mention the different positions, or you can just say Chandala and it's done. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, we're good. So the point is by devotional service, anyone can come to the platform of pure devotional service. That's it, because all souls are qualified to take up pure devotional service. Other things, you're on the material platform, you're only qualified what you have the material qualifications for. You can say, I'm not this body, but the point is, you know, I mean, how you say, you know, you have a 50cc moped and you want to drive around the world, then it might not work so good, right? So you have to know what you got. You're not this, I'm not this moped. Does that mean now it flies? You know, it's like, you know, it's like that. So, yeah. So that's the point. It's on the material platform. We can do what we can do. But all souls are qualified for the spiritual understanding. Yes.
Very good, Maharaj. Please accept my advice. I want to only ask you, because sometimes I am reading in Prabhupada's books that Prabhupada is explaining that the demons are not able to take the part of the devotional service. But in the contrary, we can see that everybody can generally take. And how to understand it is...
That's the potency of the devotees. Means they're not interested. They're not doing. They're just going to go on their life, you know, like whatever they're doing. Because for them, they're trying to enjoy themselves, sense gratification, make the best arrangements for it. Because as he mentions, the demons, they have higher demands on their facility and enjoyment than they do in the heavenly planet. They want more than they got in the heavenly planets. And even though they technically have more, they still want the heavenly planets also. So, you know, they're never satisfied. So the point is that demoniac mentality, by that you can't, but that's the specialness of the of Lord Chaitanya's mission, is by hearing the holy name, taking prasad, you know, that moment's association with the devotees, it can change. But it's up to you know. Otherwise it won't take it themselves. If Prabhupada hadn't landed in America, would there be, you know, devotees over there? You know, that's the thing, because he came there, and then you have a mission and everything, and therefore it's going on. You know, so, and it's basically, you could say, like for the mudras, then it was that in one of the mutts, then, what's it, Pejwar mutt, then the junior, then he wanted to learn English. And so I'm not sure how it worked out, but then the devotees gave him a Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, because he didn't want to kind of learn, you know, go through the whole karmi scene, because he's in the mutt, he's a sannyasi. So then he, I'm not sure, met some devotees, and they gave him a Bhagavad Gita, you know, and mentioned to him, because it has the word for word and everything, because he knows Sanskrit, he can speak Sanskrit. And then, you know, prophets gave him the word for word, so he can just, okay, I know these words and that, and then he's saying here and that. So he learned English reading Prabhupada's Gita. And then from reading the Gita there, then he got inspired to preach, you know, because otherwise they just would say the mats, they do the programs, people would come to them and everything. But then after, you know, coming in contact with the society and that, then at least the Pejor mat, the other mats didn't do it, but Pejor, they got themselves a bus. They got themselves a bus, you know, painted something on the side of the bus, you know, like we do. and you know about their mutt, and then loaded it up with brahmacharis, and you had the driver, and then the swami in the front seat, and then in the back piled in all the brahmacharis, and they would go out and do programs, right? And so that's what they're doing. And then at one point, I think there was an opportunity. Then the junior went to America and was preaching there, because there would be, you know, mud was over there, because, you know, just by, in other words, if you take, all the IT wallahs in America from India, that basically in South you have Shankarites, you have Shris, and you have Madhvas, you know, and then of course you have, you know, DMK like that. Or you could say Smartas. Okay, you have Smartas, you have Sri Vaishnavas, Madhvas, and generally the Shankarites, they'll kind of go with the Smartas. So you're going to say is that, so basically if whoever's over there, many of them will be from the Sri or Madhva background. And so then he went over there and found that there was a very good scene there that he could go and preach, because they're in America, there's nothing going on there. And so they don't do, so then he goes and like that, and he got, you know, inspired. And then when he came back for their, Paryaya? When they have there's 2 years where their mutt takes care of the deities. Like now I think it's Putike. Like that. That's when, let's see there. So you have Krishna Mutt over here. Is, what were we talking about? Pejwar. Then if you keep going around to the other side, the corner over here, I think that's Putigate. So it's them now. So it's, you know, they go for 2 years and then it goes. So every 16 years, then the Mutt is taking care. So that means they do all the puja, they raise all the money, they do everything. So it makes, you worship for 2 years, and then 14 years you simply prepare. And that way then, you know, that was the arrangement of Madhvacharya. I think they did it, it was a much shorter time. It was like every 3 months or something like that. But then they worked it out that they can't organize it so quickly, so they gave them that much time. And so then he came back for that, and then all the pundits there said, no, you have to do all the purification ceremonies because you cross the ocean and so you're contaminated. And he says, I was preaching for Madhvacharya. How can I be contaminated? They said, no, you have to do this. And he says, I'm not going to do this. And he said, well, then you can't do the puja. So then he got a ticket back to America, and I think he's still over there preaching. Because he said, you know, why should I hang out with these guys? Right? You know, So the point is that it's that then you see it's going on. Otherwise, the place was full of these people unless they come in contact with us. Now they're getting more contact with all these people. And so they're coming to the temples and everything like that. But before is that, you know, yeah, like that. So they wouldn't know without Prabhupada being there. So did that answer the question, or did I get off in my little story? And
Yes. There was only, I remember some few days ago in the lecture, you was explaining that generally we are not so much taking care to preach the demons. You know, we are focusing more for
people. But that means someone who's not interested. When we say we're not preaching to the demons, that would mean someone who, as soon as we bring it up, that they're inimical, like that. So it's like, you know, it's one of the offense. Don't preach to the faithless. But, you know, that doesn't mean that they don't hear the holy name when we do Hari Nam, or, you know, we're distributing prasad, or sometimes I've heard of devotees talking about how they joined. One devotee, it was his friend had met the devotees, and there's a Sunday feast. And, you know, had gone, I think, before. And then I guess the next week he, you know, I guess they were together. And he said, I'm going for this. Why don't you come along? And, you know, nice. He was the absolute atheist. And so he went to the temple and like that. And in those days, you kind of, all the devotees would sit down with all the guests. Right? They wouldn't eat. They would just sit and preach. Right? And you'd have, whatever's a group or this or that, sit in one place, and everybody like this. And so this individual, because he was an atheist, he just argued the whole time. You know, said, no question, no, this is all nonsense, this, that, like that. He liked the prasad. And so, and that, and then, you know, because the friend was coming, so every week they would go. And after the ninth week, this person joined. I don't remember if he mentioned that his friend joined, but he joined. So he had some contact, and if there's something there, you can do something with it. But if you see that they're just inimical and there's nothing to work with, that's meaning that the Madhyamas will leave that for now, because it means that you can spend your time, but by the time factor, it's the wrong time, right? In other words, how they're moving through their karma and all that, there's no interest. So you can't, even if you put in, you may not get anything like that. But the point is that when the time is there, then it'll happen. So they get the opportunity to meet the devotees. So if they meet and you say something and hear something and they take it, they'll move forward more. If not, what you've talked about in that will be with them. So in other words, even the demon you talk to and talk to something or give them, that stays with them. And then later in this life or next life or something like that, then that Sukriti, then they'll meet devotees again. Right? And add a little bit more. And so at some point, then they'll become more pious and more interested, and then it'll go quicker. So you just have to see. The main point is that the time when they're really, you know, making problems, then you have to be careful. Don't talk about the glories of the name. You can talk about, you know, that there is God, this and that. And unless you see that also freaks them out, then you just drop the whole thing. But if you see, is there something you can talk about? You could. But the point is if you had the option to talk to this person or talk to someone who's interested, talk to the one who's interested, because they're already at a point they can take more. This other guy may take this much, while the other person you talk to, they'll get this much. And so it'll move them forward quicker. That's the point.
Yeah, understand.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But that's why there's so much importance in the Hari Nam, the book distribution, prasad distribution, because that reaches out to people that may not be interested at all. And so because of that, there's, like, you know, I probably mentioned the books, they're time bound, they're just sitting there. And so one, just sitting in the house, they're giving out the good vibes, you know, like that. And at some point, someone may pick up the book and read it. Yeah. And sometimes it, you know, it's like there, it ends up in the garage or ends up here and there. Or that, I've heard of ones that somebody's gotten the book and it's their grandchild who then took an interest. You know, what's this book? And start reading it and all that. And then they became a devotee, even though the grandparents or parents couldn't care less, you know. So like that. And Hari Nam, everybody hears like that. You know, you don't even have to be able to read, you know. So even the birds and the bugs and, you know, they can all take advantage. And then prasad, then generally everybody likes prasad. Like that. Is that?
Yes, okay? Yes, Maharaj. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Text 34. Krishna's inconceivability. I worship the Supreme Lord, Govinda, whose toes alone, possessing inconceivable powers, Adichintya Tattve, are attained only after a billion years by multitudes of sages who discipline the mind and breath. This verse explains how the attainment of Krishna evades even the greatest yogis and jnanis. In spite of their asceticism and renunciation, they still fall short of the supreme goal, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains. It is not sufficient to destroy the condition of materiality, but the real gain to the jiva is his eternal existence in his self-realized state, right? Yeah, because you destroy the condition of materiality, and unless you move forward into a positive relationship with the Lord, then the jiva being Sat Chit Ananda can't subsist just on Sat, right? Just on eternity, because there's Chit and Ananda, and those are missing, and so then. He will come back, right? That will always happen. It's not that, well, some don't. No, they all come back. So unless, if they've been killed by the Lord, then being in that liberated position where they have no conditioning, then they, when they remember the Lord, you know, because they'll be in that liberated state. But then when they want to be involved in action, then of all activities and all persons that they've done, then the most wonderful will be the Lord. Remembering the Lord, they can go back to Godhead, right? So that's why it said they're liberated, because they'll go there. Then from there, means that just happens. Lord kills them, they are liberated. They just go to the Brahman, right? Then in that position, now they themselves can remember the glory of the Lord, because they don't have any that demoniac mentality to block it anymore. They're on the neutral platform, like the four Kumaras. They're on the neutral platform. They smell the Tulsi from the lotus feet of the Lord. They become attracted, right? So they're in that. So that's why you see some texts they're talking about they liberated. That's the general one. But some of them said, you know, they went back to Godhead. Or the same story will mention they're liberated. Another place it'll mention they went back to Godhead, because in that state they will. But it's just that it'll take some time, because, you know, you're on the Brahman platform and you'll be there for some time, because, you know, you're freed from material contamination. It's nice to be freed from material contamination. So, you know, it's just how long, like we say, how long is, if you're in a very difficult situation, how long do you completely focus on how wonderful it is getting out of that situation before you start thinking of something else? You know, you were in a traffic jam, you're stuck for hours, finally the traffic starts moving. Oh, this is great, this is fabulous. But how long until you know, turn on the radio or call somebody or think of, wow, now I can get something to eat or this and that. So when that moment comes, that's when the materialists, then they go from Brahman back into the material world, right? They're right there in Mahakalapura. Lord Shiva has his abode there, and that's his service, right? He's always serving the Lord by Harinam with his devotees, worshiping Shankarshana, but he keeps his eye on all these, you know, liberated souls, and as soon as one of them starts to think about this, then he puts them in the appropriate universe and place where, you know, they can carry out their, you know, as it says, when you fall from Brahman, it becomes a blade of grass. So you can, you know, which blade of grass, you know, is appropriate. You know, that's the one. So he works that out for you. But these others, they'll go back to Godhead, but say 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Now you take a light from a Brahma is 3/4 of a second, right? So how many 3/4 of a second that means it's 75, 75 3/4 of a second in a minute, right? And then however many minutes you're there. So you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes of Brahma. You know, for you, it's just 5 minutes or 20 minutes. But for the rest of the creation, it's been a long time. So that's why then you don't have to, they went to here, you know, they went to here, and then they go back to Godhead. So for the living entity, they went back after, you know, 20 minutes. But for us, then it was a long time. Does that make sense? We're just bringing out why they can just mention the one or mention the other. And if you mention the one, you don't, the other is there. If you mention the other, it means they already went through this part. Like that. I think that was the uniqueness of Putana, that you got the idea that she just went directly into a parental relationship with Krishna, like that. But that was, you know, but you don't hear that of the other demons. So yeah. So just to get rid of the condition of materiality isn't enough, because you will be back, right? So the real gain is the jiva's eternal existence in its self-realized state. So self-realized means you actually know who you are. Actual self-realized is the eternal existence in is like that, is that I am servant of Krishna. So that state is the actual gain. But unless he knows I am servant of Krishna, that temporary position of removing all materiality, you'll come back, because you don't know anything else, and the jiva is active. Means the jiva is expanded from the samvit potency, which means that means the position of action, right? We're not extending from the sandhini, so we're not, you know, like out of the, how you say, we're not a particle of dust or, you know, one of the, like that. So the point is we're the jivas are samvits. That means they act, they assist in the actions going on. And what is that controlled by, as we said, is about the hladini, it's about bringing about Krishna's pleasure. So therefore the jivas assist those who are performing the devotional service. That makes sense? Yeah. This can be attained only by the grace of unalloyed devotion, right? Because that's the only way you'll get. You can't get it by, I don't know what's the one. When I was a kid, you had these little boxes about this big. I'm not sure what they had. They had popcorn that had caramel on them, you know, but it hardens on that. So it was called, what was that called? Cracker Jacks. And so when you bought a box of Cracker Jacks alongside that, then you got a little prize, you know, a little toy or a little something, you know. So, yeah. Now it probably would be the what is it, the Kinder eggs? Yeah, like that. So that's not where you're going to find this self, eternal existence in this self-realized state. You know, you open the Kinder egg and woo, yeah, oh, yeah, you got pure and alloyed devotional service. Yes, core, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So no. Like that. So that is, you know, which is essentially chit or transcendental in character. Right? So essentially chit means it's the action, but its point is it's done in devotion. So that's the position, and that's done in devotion. So therefore, as jivas, as an extension of samvit, then being connected with the hladini, that makes bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So that also explains why you can be situated in that, you know, eternal position in sat and chit. But unless you've looked to serving Krishna, the ananda part won't be enthused. The bhakti won't happen. And then you'll turn your attention over to this side, which is, yeah, no chit. Yeah, no chit. What do you call it? What is it? Our prophet says it. Achit. No. Asat, achit, nirananda. You know, or you turn your attention to Krishna and the devotees that are serving. Then you follow in their footsteps, take up that service, that bhakti. Then that bhakti, then the sandini will reveal, and the appreciation of the pastimes, and then you're there. Yes? No? Okay. For this end, abstract and uninteresting mental speculation is of no avail. Right. So, in other words, if you want to attain that position of eternal existence in one's self-realized state, then mental speculation, abstract and uninteresting mental speculation is of no avail. But he said, no, it's very solid and very interesting. No, what he's meaning is anything that's not pure devotion, any kind of intellectual gymnastics that's not founded in devotion, then won't get you there. It can't. It doesn't have the ability. It doesn't have the chit potency. So, and that you get from devotees, right? Jiva Goswami remarks, the truth of the matter is that he is avichintya tattva, inconceivable. Skanda Purana and Mahabharata say, achintya kalu ye bhava na tams tarkena yojayet. Prakriti bhyaf param yachcha tad achintyasya lakshanam. Inconceivable states are not subject to material logic. The nature of the inconceivable is that it's beyond material objects, right? So that's also a point, is that anybody who is saying, no, but we're logical with all of this faith, the point is, what is achintya? What is inconceivable is beyond your ability to conceive of it. That's just the way it is. It means our facilities are limited. Faculties are limited. You can't expect to understand unlimited. You can understand that there is the concept, but actually realizing that, then you're not. It's just the way it is. So therefore, one can't argue that no, this isn't the thing. It's inconceivable. It means to say that, oh, that's just sentiment or this, that's illogical. Because the point is, if you have what, just like if you have logic, you have illogical. You know, so if you have if you have conceivable, means you have inconceivable, what's beyond that. It says, oh, that we haven't, yes, we thought, no, but there's always going to be the inconceivable. You know, you can only conceive so much. As soon as you move into the next thing, you forget the other thing. Right? You know, and if it was so great, then why is it that the previous thing was so bad? You know, you're doing, how you say, string theory, and now you're doing dark matter. And then string theory is completely bozo. It's for idiots like that. And if that's the case, you were an idiot. You know? But now you're doing this, and then, you know, after some time, dark matter will be the, you know, out of it, and, you know, so, that's so, you know, yesterday, you know, and so then, you know, and then they'll be doing something else, you know, how you say, gray matter, yeah, rainbow matter. Okay. So this is mentioned Skanda Purana and Mahabharata makes this point. Then this is just a point of logic. You know, it's just the standard thing. They can't say. It means anybody who is being objective, they're not being subjective about their own. No, whatever I say, I know everything. Then it's going to be as no, there are things beyond what you can understand. It means how much you only have so much gray matter. You know, they say, you know, it's like, you know, like that. Yeah. Brahma Sutra says, Shrutestu Shabda Mulatvat. Contradictory states can exist in the Lord because the scriptures state this. And scriptures are the root of knowledge. Vedanta Sutra 2.127, right? So one has to appreciate that there is these contradictory states, the inconceivable, what's beyond, what, how that comes. But that's the point. If you have something, an absolute truth that's the source of everything, and everything is different and unique, there's contradictions between those different points, but they all have their source in the Lord. So that means he has these qualities, contradictory states in his nature. And so it's not a problem. So, you know, one has to appreciate that's just the way it works. You can say no, but it's like, well, based on what? What do you know about inconceivable, you know, like that? Achintya means that something which has power, like jewels or special medicines, which when applied to the head affects other part of the body. Inconceivably, this power is suitable for the Lord, right? So you're putting something in one place and it causes something in another place. So that's the whole point. So yeah. Does that make sense? You know, they try to explain, you know, how do you call the, how you say, the thigh bones connect to the knee bone, and the knee bones connect to the shin bone, and the shin bone, like that. They try to explain it, but that's just their idea. Yeah? No? Okay. So that kind of power that Krishna has means the toenails, you know, the shine of the toenails like that, then the inconceivable power is there, is that these, you know, after billions of years, multitudes of sages and this mind breath, you know, it's just, they're unable to achieve that, right? So it's just he's beyond what is there. So that's why you need the parampara. Then that chit potency serving there. Then in devotion, then the sandini will the sat potency will reveal. Yeah. Okay, text 35. Bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who creates tens of millions of universes by just one of his energies, who holds the multitude of universes within himself, and who is simultaneously situated within every atom within the universe. This verse further elaborates Krishna's inconceivable powers. All pervasiveness is only a localized aspect of the majesty of Krishna. the Lord of all, right? So being all pervasive, that's the nature of Paramatma. And Paramatma is just a portion of a feature of Krishna, like that. So that's all it is. With oh, that's the grace. No, that's just the localized feature. Brahman is all pervading, but the point is this all pervading where he controls everything. He enters everything, controls everything. That's the localized. That means local. He's locally there in how you say, Paramatma's in every atom, in an atom near you, right? Like that. Okay. Though he is all pervasive, yet in his existence everywhere, in a medium shape, consists his spiritual lordship beyond human conception. Right? So even though he's all pervasive, yet he is also in his exist everywhere, in his medium shape consists of his spiritual lordship beyond human conception. So that he's there, he's all pervading, but he's still there in his medium-sized form. This argument favors the doctrine of simultaneous inconceivable distinction and non-distinction, and knocks down the contaminating Mayavad and other allied doctrines. Brahma Samhita 5.35 purport. Right, so that's the point, is that they're both there. The unlimited is there, but at the same time, it's the personal is there at the same time. So it's not, there's not a problem in the two. That's the point of the inconceivable. You can see that's why inconceivable is there. Then you make this one. Right? He's inconceivable. You have to exist. So then this is how it's working. He's all everywhere, but he's localized as well. And that's just one of his features. As evidence for Krishna's unlimited potency, Jiva Goswami cites the examples of Brahma's bewilderment at beholding unlimited Purusha avatars in place of cowherd boys, and also Mother Jashoda seeing the multitude of universes within her child's mouth. Right? So then you have that aspect of, you know, unlimited, but at the same time, he's there and is very attractive and medium form. Yeah? Good? Okay. So then we'll... Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Gaura.